The House Transportation Committee to order. President, Representatives Dugan, Johnson, myself, Fairclough, and Keller. First on the agenda is SJR 12 by Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Heather Brake, staff to Senator Terrio. Senator apologizes, he had a subcommittee budget closeout scheduled at the same time in the other body. Before you is Senate Joint Resolution Number 12. And in November, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Bureau of Customs and Border Protection published a new interpretation to the Passenger Vessel Services Act of 1886. The new interpretation would require foreign flagged cruise ships to spend 48 hours in a foreign port, spend at least 50% of the time at U.S. ports in foreign ports on their itinerary, and require that passengers depart in those foreign ports. The cruise industry brings more than 1 million passengers to Alaska each year, providing over 40,000 jobs and a significant contribution to our economy. This interpretation would have a devastating impact on many jobs, Alaskan-owned businesses, and communities in the state, both coastal and inland. The expected impact, as you'll see, you have a memo in your packet from the Department of Commerce. They estimate the impact to Alaska to be, it should impact approximately 158, it would result in approximately 158 fewer voyages, approximately 349,000 fewer passengers to Alaska, and an expected loss of $222 million in direct spending. This resolution makes it clear that the Alaska State Legislature requests that we be exempt, and if we're not exempted from this new interpretation, that we oppose the interpretation by Homeland Security. And we ask for your quick passage.
Thank you. Are there questions for the sponsor staff? Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am looking at the Federal Registry Volume 72 that was provided in our packet, and I see that there is an opportunity on page 2 of that under 3, current law and policy. If you get on to number 2, there's an exception, has been issued a certificate of documentation with the Coastwise endorsement or is exempt from documentation but would otherwise be eligible for such a certification. I'm wondering if the current ships that service communities in Alaska can qualify for that exemption, or if I've read it inappropriately.
And through the chair, Representative Fairclough, I have we do have Chris Polk here from the Department of Law that would probably be able to answer that question more accurately than I.
Any other questions for the sponsor? Seeing none, thank you, Heather. We have John Binkley online. Mr. Binkley, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is John Binkley. I serve as president of the Alaska Cruise Association. I reside in Fairbanks, and the Alaska Cruise Association's membership is made up of cruise lines who bring visitors to Alaska, as well as Alaska businesses who rely on the cruise ship industry for their livelihood. We would like to speak in support of the CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 12 and thank the committee for hearing this legislation, and also thank the sponsor for bringing it forward. I think it will really, although the public comment period is closed, it will put the state of Alaska through the legislative bodies on record as opposing a proposed measure that really would bring significant harm to many communities and businesses throughout Alaska. I think the sponsor laid out very well the economic impact that could result as a result of this new rulemaking, And we feel it would be devastating, really, to some communities throughout Southeast Alaska. And so with that, I'd be available to answer any questions that I might be able to. And otherwise, I would urge your support of the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Binkley. Representative Fairclough has a question.
Good afternoon. John, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Binkley, do you know what I'm looking at? I'm looking at a federal registry that talks about the Department of Homeland Security, the Bureau of Custom and Border Protection, and it looks like there's an exemption under 3 when it talks about current law and policy. And the number 2, it says that there's a certificate available for documentation with Coastwise endorsement. And I'm wondering if you have looked at that as the industry.
Representative Fairclough, I don't have the advantage of having that in front of me, unfortunately, and so I can't look at it in the total context. But and, of course, I'm not a lawyer at all. But my understanding is that the cruise lines' legal departments have studied it very thoroughly, and I have not heard mention that there is some exemption that they could file for that they're aware of. The two actions that they are hopeful of, number one, is that the rulemaking does not apply to Alaska, that it's specific only to Hawaii. Number two, that they don't have a rule at all regarding this. Or number three, potentially legislation that would make it clear that Alaska and other jurisdictions are exempt from that, and this would only apply to Hawaii.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Binkley? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Ron Peck in Anchorage?
Yes, I'm here, Chair.
Do you have testimony?
I do, and I'll go ahead. My name is Ron Peck. I'm president of the Alaska Travel Industry Association, and have had that position for almost 7 years. I'm a resident of the Hillside in Anchorage, Alaska. The Alaska Travel Industry Association is a trade association that advocates on behalf of its over 1,000 member businesses involved in the travel and visitor industry. ATIA wholeheartedly endorses Senate Joint Resolution 12, opposing changes to the interpretation of the Passenger Vessel Services Act. Should a reinterpretation of the PVSA occur, this change will dramatically impact cruise itineraries in Alaska, the visitor experience in our state, and just as importantly, severely impact the multitude of independently owned Alaska businesses throughout the state of Alaska that work with the cruise industry in offering land experiences for those visitors. I'd just like to briefly read a portion of the resolution passed without dissent by the ATIA Board of Directors. Whereas the visitor industry is an important economic engine of Alaska's private sector, and whereas the cruise industry delivers over 1 million visitors annually to Alaska, whereas the application of the proposed rule change to Alaska would diminish the attractiveness of Alaska as a cruise visitor destination, and whereas there has been no attempt to quantify the economic impact of Alaska's visitor industry, this will harm Alaska-owned operated businesses who provide services to cruise ship visitors and the cruise line. Be it therefore resolved that the Alaska Travel Industry Association Board of Directors is opposed to the proposed Department of Homeland Security's proposed rule change because it would dramatically and negatively impact Alaska's businesses and communities. Mr. Chair, that ends my testimony. If I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Peck. Any questions for Ron Peck? Seeing none, in the audience, Fred Yates. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yates. We have Chris, I believe, Poeg, is that right? Chris is with the Department of Law. I'm not sure if Representative Fairclough, did you want to propose that to the Department of Law? Or?
I'm not an attorney, thank you, Mr. Chairman, so let's put that on the record first. And so I'm sure that it refers to some other portion of federal law that I'm not understanding, but if you have do you have the document?
I do. For the record, my name is Chris Pogue. I'm an Assistant Attorney General at the Department of Law. And if I could hand you what you're reading is the actual law, the actual federal law, what's being reinterpreted, or I should say being formally interpreted by the proposed regulation packet is the federal regulation. But if I hand you a copy of The actual law that you'll see from Westlaw, you'll see that the or that you're referring to doesn't modify the and that comes after number one. So number one, the first requirement is this is this. Does that answer the question?
Got it.
Thank you. Any other questions for Chris? Representative Johnson?
Can you tell me what a, what coastwise is? As I read through the law, it says a coastwide trade, or wise, coastwise, and a coastwise certification. What is a coastwise?
Representative Johansson, Representative Johnson, the short answer is when you stop at a U.S. port, that's a coastwise stop. So this is about foreign flag vessels stopping in U.S. ports and when they're allowed to do that under this federal law. And this is a reinterpretation of a regulation that currently allows for these vessels to stop in Alaska because they returned to the port they started from in Seattle but made a stop in a nearby foreign port, which is Vancouver. However, the reinterpretation for the Hawaii ports is implicating or arguably affecting the Alaska vessels as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you for making yourself available. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify on the bill? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Committee discussion? Seeing none, entertain a motion to move the bill out of committee. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move CS for Senate Joint Resolution number 12, version backslash M from committee with any individual recommendations or attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, the bill is so moved. Thank you. We'll go at ease just for a moment. Next up, we have CS for SS for HB 294, and per the direction by the rules chair, I would invite both co-prime sponsors to the witness table, Representative Wilson and Seaton. And we are missing Representative Ledoux, who is also a co-prime sponsor on the bill. So
and
I guess if we had a chance to ex Kodiak out, this is it.
Okay, let's just take them right out of here.
Can they submit a proposal for a legislative hall?
Yes, only if you get it out of committee, sir. So we've got House Bill 294, and I'm not sure who wants to take the lead, but we'd like to hear about the bill.
Okay, and I'm just going to give a little bit about I know it's a long sponsor statement, but I am not going to go through the whole thing. I will go a little ways and tell you a little bit about the genesis of the Marine Highway System. It occurred way back in the late 40s. They started out with a commercial ferry system on Lynn Canal and converted from an old World War II LCT Mark 16 landing craft. Their business was purchased by the Territorial Board of Road Commissioners in 1951, and it continued to operate for another 6 years. And while the territorial government built a new but smaller ferry, this vessel began daily service between Juneau and the communities of the Lynn Canal in June of 57. After Alaska became a state in 59, they expanded the ferry fleet. And the first new ship was the Malaspina in January of 63, and this sailed the Inside Passage to Ketchikan. The Alaska Marine Highway System became official in 1963. Today there are a total of 11 vessels serving in the Alaska Marine Highway fleet. Over the years, this ferry system has expanded to include additional routes between Whittier and Valdez to Kodiak, Seward, Homer, along the Aleutian Chain, Prince Rupert in British Columbia, and between otherwise isolated Native villages. The Alaska Marine Highway System is part of the National Highway System and has routes that serve important national functions, security, commerce, and travel. Also, it falls under the mission and vision of the Federal Highway Administration. So some consider the Marine Highway as their lifeblood to other areas of the state. This is particularly significant for those towns and villages that aren't connected to the roadway to the mainland, giving every one of these communities the opportunity to expand the commerce of their region, and provides a vital link for families, schools, and cultures of the region. One of the problems with trying to manage a system like the Marine Highway is that typically every 4 years a new management team is established within the system and within the department. Individuals are appointed and have a varying degree of experience when they come to manage the organization, and they are typically very enthusiastic and ask for indulgence while they learn the device nuances of the department. And unfortunately, this evolution is sluggish and breeds a mediocrity. In May of 2002, a study was released by the McDowell Group, and two of the conclusions reached speak volumes as to why the Marine Highway system is in trouble. One of the key issues expressed was that the current operating model is outmoded and no longer adequately meets the needs of the users. Another conclusion stated that the existing management structure may not be sufficient for the future. The study also asserted that the Marine Highway system had economic impact statewide estimated at $171 million in 1995, and of course we know it's much bigger than that now. This lends credence to the arguments surrounding how important the highways or the Marine Highway system is to local economies as far-reaching as Fairbanks. It's the intent of House Bill 294 to solve this dilemma by establishing an Alaska Marine Transportation Authority Board. This board will provide steadfast command and control over the highway, the Marine Highway system, and continuity, if you will, that is essential throughout any transition of a new governor or any changes in the hierarchy. And for instance, is in just the time that I've been a legislator, we've had four different people in control of the Marine Highway system, and one of those has just resigned, and so that will make five. Three different governors, and so it's very difficult to have continuity when the person that's in charge of the system keeps changing. So I think it's the Marine, the ferry system wouldn't be in this position if that person didn't change every time a governor came in, so that's one of the things that this bill we want to do with this bill. The bill also puts a board in place, an 11-member board appointed by the governor, and one very unique duty of the board would be to select nominees for the position of director of the division, and that is established in the bill. So there's a lot more about the bill. I'm not going to go into that, but I want to do one quote from the McDowell study, and it said, success over the long term will require a carefully crafted combination of management, operations, and funding strategies and execution. And I think that if we got someone that would not change every time the governor changed, and it would help with continuity within the system itself, and we would have the same kind of driving force that would go forward, and we wouldn't be constantly sitting back, and maybe even the whole, depending on a new governor, whether the system, the goals are different each time. So that's all I'm going to say, and I'll let Representative Seaton go ahead with the next, and then my staff, who has been working on this diligently, knows it much better than I do. I'll let him go through a sectional for you.
Thank you. Before we go on any further, I think we have CS of the original sponsors substitute. So we get a motion to adopt version L, please. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill 294, version /L, for committee discussion.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Wilson? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. Appreciate being able to be here. As I think we all know, the Marine Highway System is a very integral part of all of coastal Alaska, and the purpose of this bill is to make sure that we have an effective way of proceeding and enhancing and making it effective for all of the coastal Alaska. The bill that you have before you is different than the original. The original concept was something like, you know, the Marine, like the Alaska Railroad or independent corporation. That's very difficult. So what this sponsor substitute did was take and say we're converting the Marine Advisory Board, the MTAB, into an authority board. So as Representative Wilson just said, one of the very important things is to get a level of expertise in the department and to have those people nominated, just like the Fisheries Board, just like the Game Board, where they are nominated and selected for their expertise, and then the governor chooses from the nominees that are coming from the board. And you know, we think that's very important, especially if there can be continuity across time. So basically, this is hoping to get some long-range planning, some structure, and to having a very public advocate for the Marine Highway System. We have been feeling that we have been lacking the public advocacy or the advocacy to the legislature for the Marine Highway System, and so that's what we feel this bill will accomplish. And so thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Seaton? Representative Dugan first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions here, and I don't know which one would be most appropriate to ask. The Marine Highway System is important to all of us, but I reckon it's more important to the members from coastal communities. I just did a rough count. There's about 10 of them. You've got five of them on the bill. Do you know if the other five of them agree with you?
We have been talking, and I think most of them, all of them do, and there might be a couple that I haven't got to yet, but by far and large, we all met together and discussed this and tried to figure out what was the pros and cons and how we should handle this and what we should put into the bill. So,
yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, a guy from a landlocked district in Anchorage doesn't want to get crossways with people on this. Another question that I had is I noticed in the packet that there's a legal opinion speaking to a provision in the bill that says that members may only be removed by the governor for cause, and offers the opinion of the legislative council that this probably is not going to stand up. So I guess I wanted to know if the sponsors agree with that opinion and are agreeable to changing that in a way that doesn't cause constitutional problems.
And Mr. Thank Chairman, Representative Dugan, we do have an amendment to offer for that. There was also one other problematic section of the bill which dealt with contractual services, which we also have a amendment for, to try to narrow that down so that we're talking about services and not goods. So there's no intention that this board would be able to go out and buy a ferry or buy docks or buildings or anything else. So we've got those two amendments that we can offer to you at this time, if you'd like. I mean, just for your information so that you have them, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, well, I believe Mr. Stone is going to take us through section by section, so we'll deal with those as they come up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're just going to go down the line here. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, I want to make sure I heard you. Did you say this would be replacing an existing board? You used some three-letter term that I'm not familiar with.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, yes, it's the MTAB, Marine Transportation Advisory Board, currently, and this is changing that so we didn't have to change the stationery. Marine Transportation Authority Board. It actually gives them authority to pick the nominees, to also have a very direct say working with the DOT in the creation of ongoing plans and structure.
If I could follow up?
Is that board funded now? So they have the same per diem in the meetings four times a year and et cetera that most boards have that we're talking about in this fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, Representative Johnson, yes, I believe that they're meeting, it's the same meeting schedule that is on proposed for the new board.
Mr. Chairman, in that case, I would question the fiscal note. If we're replacing one board with another board and just giving additional duties, I'm not sure why we have a fiscal note that contemplates a whole new board. So I just have asked questions about that. Maybe Cliff can answer that later. So yeah, ask questions about here. So
we'll. I also have questions on the fiscal note, and we'll take that up in due course if that's okay.
That's fine. I will have to leave, Mr. Chairman. So
we're going to hold on to the bill, so we'll have time to talk about it later. Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have people to testify today? Because I want to be brief.
We do. We have, just for the committee's knowledge, a representative from the Department of Law. We have the Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Hardy, and we also have Mr. Yates, I believe, wants to testify on. Is it this bill that you wanted to testify on?
Yeah.
Okay, and then we have Clay Copeland from the MTAB Board who also wants to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions regarding the legal opinion that we've received. In the last paragraph, it talks about that what is being proposed before this committee today really doesn't fit in the category of being regulatory or quasi-judicial. And so that concerns me in that we're trying to develop something that sort of is not something we've dealt with before as far as its authority and what it can do. So I'd like someone to speak to that. And then in regards directly with authority, speak to the governor's ability to have people that participate on whether it's the MTAB board or whether the new proposed group as they come together, if she isn't the one who's appointing them and we're being very rigid in how we're describing the criteria of the person that would be appointed and that each region is basically picking someone from that region to go forward, how does that person actually advocate if that's not who the administration wants? Are we creating a conflict when a person isn't vetted through a normal process that we do on other boards, in all the other boards that we look at a submission of qualifications and the governor goes through or her staff goes through and tries to bring the most qualified candidate forward? So if you could speak to me about some of that conflict. I think those are my legal questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Before I answer, if I can interject, I wasn't quite clear. Did you mean I believe the board consists of 11 members appointed by the governor and confirmed by the members of the legislature. Were you speaking of the so-called executive director or head of the Marine Highway or the board members themselves?
Well, that's another whole discussion altogether. I'm wondering how we get to the best advocate for the communities. I'm looking at the prescription of you're going to have one member who has significant level of experience in private sector. I'm on page 3, the top of the line, and then we just go down A, B, C, D, E, and we have a retired Marine captain, and we start to become prescriptive. And so I'm wondering the benefit of the prescription, if it's solving what we want it to solve. Does it, if our illness is we don't have qualified people to look at the issue, I just want to see that balance. It seems like we may create conflict between the board and the administration, and maybe that's what we want to do if we haven't seen it work effectively before. But it seems like we're creating loggerheads to me.
I just didn't understand, but now I do. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Representative Faircloth, through the chair. The makeup of this board is somewhat similar to the makeup of the MTAB currently. There is a captain on there. He brings a level of expertise, a level of knowledge to the board. We also, there's been this huge problem of scheduling, and so we're hoping to have someone that's familiar with scheduling and travel tourism agent, somebody familiar with the reservation system, so that there is expertise on the board for doing that. This is covers a large region. There needs to be buy-in, we believe, by people all across the marine highway system. So that's why there are the breakouts for to making sure that the communities in all these areas are represented. I think that what we find is that all of these members are will serve as advocates for the marine highway system to make it work well. And so I don't see it as going to be at loggerheads with each other. I think they'll be working together to form policies and work on structures and work on schedules, those kind of things that will be beneficial to the entire system. So I don't think that, I don't think it's prescriptive in a manner that that will be detrimental to the system. I think it'll bring expertise to the table. If we had it just that there was going to be appointees by the governor without representation from the smaller communities of the southeast and the larger communities as well as out west, I think that what we would be looking at is people not not trusting that they are represented well in the system. And so that's why the diversity of representatives are put onto that board. But it is they are by the governor, and that we do have in that legal opinion, we have one of the amendments there is to take it out so that it isn't eliminated by cause, so that she can they serve at the pleasure of the governor. So if someone isn't functioning, but that's an amendment that is just on the table before you. I mean,
right,
nobody talked to you.
I don't have the amendment when I reviewed.
Well, and when Cliff goes through it section by section, I think we can discuss that one further. And it might be helpful for the committee if the current MTAB board is by executive order. And it was initially from Governor Murkowski. I believe the initial board was 11. And I believe the current governor pared that back to 9. And it might be helpful if the sponsors would provide copies of the makeup of both of those boards to the committee so we can see kind of how it was done. From the governor's office. Follow-up, Representative Faircloth?
Well, I have looked at the study, the McDowell study, and read it, so I'll be prepared to quote some other portions of the study when we get into debate and listening. But the other portion that I am trying to grasp is going back to the legal opinion, we're not creating a regulatory board, nor are we creating a quasi-judicial board. So I need to understand what the intent is of the board and how powerful that board is going to be in the end in appropriations, because that's where it's going to go to. And so to that end, it's sort of set up like an authority. And I say sort of because it really doesn't have the powers of an authority because we're the appropriation body. So under the authority concept, typically authorities are based on predictable income that makes them relatively independent of annual appropriations. So that's where we get into conflict. And that's right out of the McDowell. I'm not being brainy here. This is a quote out of the McDowell report when I read it. And so you've grabbed a component of the McDowell report and are implementing it. I understand why, because it was a recommendation, and I understand exactly what Representative Wilson said on operation and management because I've read it in the report. But so talk to me, and it can be now or afterwards, but talk to me about the authority concept when you don't have a predictable revenue stream because you're asking it to do something it can't.
Thank you. Any other did you want to respond to that, Representative Wilson?
Actually, what we want is a board that has the authority to be able to put someone in place so that they don't, this person would still have to be, okayed by the governor. However, they would search for the for the person that would be the director, so that they would have someone that they knew had the expertise to handle the job. And we're not saying that they have authority to do anything with money. We're saying that they have the authority to go ahead and to make plans, to make sure that this person is listening to the board, and this person still has to work with the commissioner. And so it's just that what has happened in the future or in the past, because everything is what we have obviously isn't working. And so we have to do something here to see if we can fix it and make it better. And this is an attempt to make things better, and one way is to have continuity so that when a governor changes, that person that runs the ferry system doesn't automatically change, because that's what happens now. And so we're just trying to, the governor still has the appointive authority, but that board would maybe put a, you know, I don't know what, they put I don't know how they do it, but with an RFP or however they do it, they would ask for people to put their names in the hat. They would go ahead and review that person, check out their qualifications and everything, because they want to make sure it's somebody that knows what they're doing. And so that's pretty important. And what's happened in the past is sometimes it takes a year or two for the person that's been appointed to understand how things are running and what's going on. And we don't want that to happen. We want to have continuity so that we've got the goal of the board and somebody that can go forward, and so that we don't have changes all the time. Because when you have changes all the time, what happens is that things are up in the air. It's, you know, and obviously things like scheduling didn't get done this time on time. It's messed up all across the state, all the coastal areas. It's just made a huge changes in what's going on and how people that are planning for, whether they're charter people or whether they're whatever their way of helping the economy of their area, it messes it up. And with the schedule changes, that I don't know how many times the schedule has changed in the last year, many times. And we don't want that. And in order to have something that is smooth and carrying on, we want to have something that a two-year schedule, a schedule that is a so we want that board to have authority to make those kind of plans. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to control things, because they still have to work through the commissioner on this. So this board, it is a quiet board that is kind of got authority, but they're not going to have authority for as far as money.
Thank you. And before we go too far afield, I'd like Cliff to go through section by section, but if you'd like to follow up, Representative Faircloth, I saw.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The issue in my position here today is to balance the statewide, regional, and local needs of interests on how the ferry system operates and how it integrates with other transportation modes and the infrastructure that the state provides, not only for the ferry system, but for the air system and for the road system and for however we move it. And so that's where my concern arises. And so I'll look forward to the sectional analysis to see what's being proposed.
Thank you very much. Cliff, as you go through this, did you have a question?
Yeah, a couple.
Okay. Cliff, can we boot you out for a second so Representative Newman can ask, I think,
sure,
one of the two co-primes?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
Absolutely.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to start at the beginning and work my way through here. It says we're to develop a long-range
comprehensive long-range plan. Well, I'm assuming that would be a fiscal plan that would be involved in that. And we don't have a fiscal plan for our state as a whole.
We should.
Well, I know you say we should, but things tend to change from year to year or every other year, from legislature to legislature, and whether that should be the permanent fund dividend or whatever it is. We've also received a lot of information, and at least members of this committee anyhow, on the STIP and the lack of federal funds that are going to be coming forward, the inability for the state to try and predict how those funds are going to come forward. So could you explain how you would see the development of this long-range fiscal plan?
They're going to need to start making some plans because of the fact that our ferries are old and they're breaking down. So they need to think of a plan I don't know for sure how they're going to do this, because we're not saying in the committee or in the bill how we're not mandating what they have to come up with. We're just telling them that they have to look at things and decide whether what they're going to come up with as far as a schedule, maybe, to look at how would be a wise way to make sure that we start replacing these vessels. Now it's talking about federal fundings. That's no different than Medicare and Medicaid. We don't know how that funding is going to be either. I mean, you know, so we can't say that with any part of our budget. You know, so we just want somebody that we know are looking out for the ferry system as a whole and trying to establish a goal and how that goal could be reached. And you might have some more comments to make on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, there are currently regional plans, Southwest Regional Plan, Southeast Regional Plan, and the goal here is to bring the MTAB into the consultation process and doing that instead of having it just a department plan, so that this would be a consultation between the communities and the board with the department to generate that plan. It's not just money, it's also goals and visions and you know what you intend to provide as services in the future, so and what are the needs of the communities.
And if I just might add, this is current statute. The comprehensive long-range plan is in statute. They already do this, and the only change to this section is adding the input of the MTAB, basically. It's the only change from what they're already charged to do under statute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that. I was just trying to get to where the understanding was with the legislators proposing this bill in the discussions that they've had with the department already, with the current director, soon to be ex-director, of what their plan is and how they implement, because I know that they've submitted a plan to this body, to this committee, that kind of already has a lot of this in there. But so I was trying to figure out how we're going to mesh both these all together, and trying to lay the groundwork there. And if I can just continue on with my questions.
Sure.
I just got a couple. I realize we want to get to committee or public discussion.
Well, actually, I thought it might be beneficial for Cliff to run us through section by section and discuss each section. So if you could hold your questions until we get to that section, we can kill two birds with one stone. Would that be? Or if you really want to go through, that's fine.
I guess if you want me to ask Cliff my questions. I'll just ask a couple here, and then we'll just clarifying stuff before we get there. And then I know you're going to hold this, so I don't want to. It says on page 5 that the board has express authority to enter contractual services. And the first thing that jumped to mind was TERS, PERS issues. And it's my understanding to the McDowell report that this allows the board to manage authorize management to conduct independent labor negotiations and both provide for labor and to be represented on the governing board. Is that, am I missing a boat here on this one?
Mr. Chairman.
Unintended.
Representative Newman, yeah, I'm sorry you didn't have these earlier. We, you know, these issues came up and we've been trying to address them. You have one of the two amendments that you have proposed.
Passed out one, but we only got one.
So. Oh, there should be two. It should be labeled L2, changes at contractual services to make sure that it's seen that it's services that are within the scope of, you know, so that they can go out for RFPs for scheduling and those things.
Just received it.
Sorry for the delay.
And then this is the board, so select nominees for the director. I fully support the right of the governor to select her cabinet members and the people who serve the commissioners, and I think that that's definitely their prerogative. And that includes directors, you know, and that's fully the governor's choice, and I, my opinion, only the governor's choice. So I guess if we have a committee that would select only three, what if the governor decided they didn't want one of those three?
I'm sure he'd tell them.
Well, there's nothing in here that addresses any of that.
No, it doesn't have to be, though. I mean, governor's got her, you know, the power to do that. But that way, at least we'll know that it's somebody that's qualified, and if she doesn't like those three, then they'll have to look at it again, I guess.
I'll ask you this. Do you think that the current director is qualified?
I don't know. I haven't checked it. I really don't know what his qualifications are.
Okay, I just was asking that then because we had to approve the director, so. I don't know where to get on that one, but I'd like the governor to be able to support
this.
That.
This isn't for anything against anybody that's in place now. We just want to get something so that we've got continuity, and I don't want anybody to think that we're trying to do something like that because we're not. What we're trying to do is for the ferry system itself that we have continuity from 1 year to the next. And like I said earlier, there has been four different people in that position. Now that's none of their fault, but I mean we've had four people in that position in the last 8 years, and so it's been pretty tough to keep things running smoothly when that happens.
And just when we come back, if you could, we don't need to even go through the time now, if you could just have an explanation of what would happen if the governor rejected those.
And Representative Newman, through the chair, just for clarity, the board of the joint boards of Fish and Game send nominees to the governor. Same thing, a list of hopefully it's three people, and she selects. She can reject all, and they can bring forward others. Board of Education, Commissioner of Education. There are a number of things that are very important that need expertise, and so what happens is that there is a board like this that goes through and that has expertise and selects qualified individuals and nominates them to the governor, and the governor then chooses. The governor doesn't have to select. You know, it's been in the past where there's only been one name forwarded and a governor just rejected and said no, just because there weren't enough. So.
And I believe in other board situations, three names have been sent to the governor, and all three have been rejected. Mm-hmm. It's not a binding limit on only those three. Pick one. It's if I don't like them, bring three more forward. Is that correct?
That's my understanding as well, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Does you have more?
Yeah, just on it says the board may establish. I'm assuming that they probably would like to do that. Establish regional advisory committees, and this has been kind of an issue near and dear to my heart particularly with the Board of Fish and the lack of communication between the advisory committees and the Board of fishing at, in recent history here with myself, is I've asked the department and, you know, to work with the advisory councils. And there's no way for them. They don't do that now. So if you can figure out a way to make that happen, I want to hear about it, okay?
And please, if I can interject again, I'm sorry to keep interjecting, but I am extremely interested in this bill. I think that problem that you identify with the regional advisory committees on the Board of Fish and Board of Game is exactly the issue that is trying to be solved with this, because MTAB now is treated the same way a regional advisory committee is treated by the Board of Fish and Game. So I think that might be the intent. If you disagree, feel free.
No, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly the issue in the bill and why it's before you.
Thank you. Further follow-up, Representative Newman?
Is this board, I'm seeing we're looking at contracts, instead of contractual services on page 5, it says contracts and services that are within the scope of the board's powers, duties, and functions. I'm assuming that when we look at this administrative order for duties of the board, it would include 1, 2, and 3, and that would be limited to those.
I don't think yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not seeing what.
Yeah. There we go.
There, Dave.
Mr. Chairman, this was the MTAB board, which was advisory, and so this board is going to have more powers than the advisory board. It's going to be able to nominate the individuals. It's also going to be able to go out for RFPs for scheduling. If they're having troubles getting the two-year scheduling done, they'd be able to do that. The, you know, those RFPs would still have to be accepted and funded through the legislature. They would still have to be, but at least this allows them to go out and solicit those kinds of bids for the department and for that. So there are more duties than the advisory board, and they're listed on page 4 and 5.
So if I may, Mr. Chair, so the duties, it talks about selecting nominees for position, establishing advisory councils, and work in cooperation with DOT. And then it talks about contractual services, and we have an amendment to that. Is that the full extent of the board's powers, duties, and functions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, yes, that's correct. I mean, you do have some other things. The authority granted in this section includes requesting proposals to develop a two-year ferry schedule for year-round service submitted to the department. So there are those, and then in the one in C, Mr. Chairman, you can see that it's the includes a strategic plan, includes the missions, the core values, the objectives, initiatives, performance goals for the Alaska Marine Highway System, and submit a plan to the department for consideration. So they're somewhat broader than just to basically send recommendations to the governor, and somewhat more specific.
And then we'll hold the rest of our questions for now.
Thank you. Any other questions for the sponsors? Representative Dugan?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. We took long enough. I thought of another question.
I was afraid.
So the board comes up with three names, sends them to the governor. The governor picks somebody. They're now the director of marine transportation. Who do they work for?
They actually, go ahead, but they're paid for by the DOT, and so that person will be like a board of directors, and the board of directors sits and makes suggestions, but there still has to be somebody else that's in control.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, yeah, it would be under the commissioner of DOT, the department.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Faircloth.
But I do want to make one comment, though, because the board will have their goals for that person. Then that person would go to DOT, and, of course, the commissioner can override what that board has said, because they don't have full authority. But at least then that gives that person something to discuss with the commissioner, and if they have concerns.
I'm just trying to sort of think my way through this, Mr. Chairman. In typically, the governor appoints a commissioner. The commissioner hires everybody else, and the chain of command sort of goes pretty straight up. This seems to have a system in which now the governor is going to pick a commissioner of transportation and a director of the marine highway system. And yet then the director of the marine highway system is going to be working sort of for the commissioner. It just strikes me that it might be a little bit awkward is all. But I don't know. I'll think about that some more. Thank you.
And it might be a little awkward, but it's not working the way it's working now. So, I mean, we have to try something. You know, maybe it won't work, but we've got to try something.
So. I understand. Like I said, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to think about this a little bit more. I'm just sort of trying to... Thanks.
Representative Faircloth, do you have a question for the sponsors?
Mr. Chairman, I'll hold. I just see a conflict in a management ability when you have a board of directors that sets goals that is not approved by the head of the department. And then what I'm perplexed about is I believe we have legislation that's moving through that is eliminating a deputy commissioner of marine transportation, and then we're bringing it back. That, well, we are if we do this. And so we have some things in float. Inside of the transportation budget, I thought a position was cut. And I know that I know the staff to the person who chaired that committee is in the room. And so I believe, cut a position, and then...
I believe it was put back.
Is it been put back now? Some nods.
I understand.
Okay, so then we have multiple layers now. We have a commissioner, a deputy commissioner of marine highways, and now a director of... And so I'd just like to get clarity on that.
Well, first of all, the position is, my understanding, has not been put back. You know, that is in the operating budget. There is a fiscal note attached to this bill putting that position back in, but I've voiced my opinion to the sponsors that I don't think it's going to leave this committee with that position put back in there. And if it's the will of the committee, then we just might not ever bring it back up again. But
Mr. Chairman, if I might, my concern is that we have a bill that's going to affect the planning and the implementation. And let me put on the record, I support continuity, and I will do everything in my power to help the marine highway system have continuity. I understand that issue, and I understand the scheduling. But now we have a commissioner who's reporting to the governor, and we don't know if we have a deputy commissioner of marine highways, truly, because it's in flux right now. And then we're creating a position for the Alaska Marine Transportation Director, who does not have a clear line of authority under the commissioner because he's reporting to a board that's developing criteria. So there's a little bit of fragmentation in the organizational chart that I'll need some clarity on as we go through.
We can scrub that out with sponsors. Any more questions before we have Mr. Cliff Stone run us through the sectional?
We have a copy of the sectional.
Mm-hmm. He's right there. Cliff, before you get going, do you have a summary of this in writing for the committee? Representative Newman was
summary
requesting a sectional.
The sectional should be in your packet.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a one-page sectional.
And if we can go section by section, and I'd ask committee members to we'll just do it one at a time and ask questions, get it out of the way, and go on to the next one. Thanks. And also, any of these amendments that we had talked about, if you could integrate that into your testimony, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Cliff Stone. I'm staff to Representative Wilson. Sometimes I feel like I'm also staff to Representative Seaton and a couple others. But
Before I start on the sectional, it truly was a collaborative effort on several legislators' parts, meeting quite a number of times. And what I came away with from all those meetings was the fact that the legislators were trying to find somebody that could advocate on behalf of the marine highway system. They felt that was not being done in the Department of Transportation. And quite frankly, the more stakeholders you have involved in a system like this, I think it's good. Representative Newman brought forward about the advisory councils. That was another reason we threw that in there, to have the stakeholders on the advisory level, on the community level, that would then have their input into the board, and then that board has their input into the director. So with that, Mr. Chairman, and if members, as I'm going through it section by section, there were so many questions that came up, I lost track. So if members would just address those as we're going through this. I believe in being brief. I know there's other folks that want to testify and clear up some constitutional issues, and DOT is here to provide testimony as well. Section one of this bill, and I'll read through this only because of the listening audience, and when folks pull this up later. Section one of the bill requires the Department of Transportation Public Facilities to consult with the Alaska Marine Transportation Authority Board in preparing a long-range comprehensive plan. The chairman was correct. Currently in statute 19.65.011, the department is mandated to create and update a plan every 5 years for the long-range plan. And now they, according to this language, they must do so in consultation with the Alaska Marine Transportation Authority Board. I could see where they could possibly do that through the director, because the authority board has given the director their focus, their vision, and now they can, that director can conveniently boil down the recommendations of those 11 members and present them to DOT, or the board itself has the chance to provide that direct testimony to the department.
Thank you. Representative Fairclough had a question.
On section one, thank you for your patience. Could you please define for me what you think consult means? Or I can hold it for legal. I'm trying to get, again, on the chain of the command, the authority aspect, and then if you're consulting, we're just creating a board that is suggesting ideas. There's not really any teeth. If that's what we're doing, that's okay with me, but that doesn't get to consistency in management or the other thing. If they're consulting, that means we're checking a box that we've asked. And so then the secondary question, that's what's the consequence for not accepting the recommendation of the board? So if you could speak to me about consultation, or I'll hold it for legal.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Fairclough, certainly consultation is a word, but it has certain ramifications, and different people would perceive that word in a different context. I certainly couldn't speak to the legal aspect of it, so maybe law, save that one for law. As far as the department not following up, I think because this is an authority board, the authority board, and it's the intent of the prime sponsors and co-sponsors, that they would pay attention to this board, because they feel like, and other folks in the building feel like, that the MTAB advisory board is not being listened to, even this most recent configuration. So if DOT chooses not to listen to them, I don't know what the consequences would be, but shame on them. They've taken the time to staff the board, etc. And I think they would, in all honesty, I think DOT would take under consideration what the board is giving them.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I don't agree. I think that we're recreating the MTAB board with no teeth to actually have DOT do anything different from what I've read. And I'm not opposed to making a change that empowers them in some way, but you're not all the way to an authority board because you don't control your revenue stream for the expenses that you're going to incur in the system. So I'll listen.
Thank you. Any other questions on Section 1? Seeing none.
Can we reserve that right?
Of course you may reserve that right.
Mr. Chairman, members, Section 2 of the bill adds two new articles to Alaska Statute 19.65, detailing the Alaska Marine Highway Organization and Operations and creating the Alaska Marine Transportation Authority Board. It presents two articles. First article, Article 3, Alaska Marine Highway Organization and Operation, is it the wishes of the chair? I go down through there, and then we can attack each one.
You can just go through each numbered section briefly, and if there are questions, we'll stop you.
Section 19.65.110, Division of Marine Transportation. So this section establishes the Division of Marine Transportation, and this was done so because a version E we had, which you don't have before you, but I've included that legal opinion from Ledge Legal about version E. They recommended that we do establish a division. You have currently within DOT, you have Marine Highway, Department of Highways. You have a northern region. You have a southeast region. You have a couple other regions, and you have directors that are heads of those regions. And they said throughout statute, directors and divisions are created exactly as they recommended here. So they said to be consistent throughout all of the statutes, you really need to establish its own division. Currently, there's if you look at the DOSO, there's the Alaska Marine Highway System, and we envision that the Marine Highway System would just fit inside of that division, and the language might have to be scrubbed a little bit to make that happen, but it's there in the language.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm trying to wrap my arms around how I see this. Is do we now have Department of Transportation, Division of Marine Transportation?
This bill would establish a separate division of Marine Transportation, yes.
Okay, so it establishes a separate division within DOT for Marine Transportation, and then this board advises that division?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, yes. Division, of course, would have a director. That director would be in charge of the day-to-day operations of that division. Thus, the Marine Highway System as well, because it would fall under that division.
Would that be the director whose name is forwarded by the members of the board?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, yes.
Okay.
Representative Faircloth?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd like to talk to DOT on this point to just get the chain of command, or I don't want anybody to shout out, but you're better than a division right now, as I understand it, in the Department of Transportation because you have a deputy commissioner. That's a higher level. So we're creating an additional layer of bureaucracy in that you have a deputy commissioner solely that's responsible for that, if I'm understanding the organizational chart. And then under that, you're going to create a division on a department inside that's already separate. So I don't understand the uniqueness of creating a division inside of a division that's already separated, that already has a head that reports more directly to the governor than the central region.
And I understand your question. I'd like to let Cliff run through this.
Oh, okay. It's fine. You asked it by section, so that's the only reason.
Right.
I can hold till the end if...
No, I just didn't want to bring Marine Highways up in the middle of it, but I think that's a very valid question. So if we could save it for Marine Highways, that
absolutely
comes up. What also might be good for the committee would be not only for DOT to provide a flow chart on positions, but have the sponsors also do that as well, so we can see. Seems to be a little confusion as to who goes where. I think Representative Dugan was questioning that too. So if we could make a note, and when Marine Highways comes up, we can hit him with that.
Absolutely. Can I ask for a nod in the audience? Is this a separate division already? And if the answer is no, that's all right. Then I'll wait for the explanation. It's not a nod. That's fine. We can go on.
Okay. We'll have them up in front of the committee on the record.
It's a unique definition. I got it. Thank you.
I think the folks in the back are having a hard time typing a nod into the record. If we could remember that question and bring it up to them specifically.
I'll try.
Thank you. And then next, the Alaska Marine Transportation Director section.
Yes, Section 19.65.120 creates the Alaska Marine Transportation Director. And I'd be happy to try and answer any questions there.
Representative Dugan.
I do have a question. The director seems to have a couple of different kinds of duties here. One is to run the division, and the other is to do a bunch of planning through the Marine Transportation Authority Board. So does this work that he'd do those plans, he'd submit them to the board, he, she, whatever. I got to get better with my pronouns given the way things are going around this building, Mr. Chairman. That the director would give these plans to the advisory, the authority board, which would then approve or reject them. Is that the way this system is the director then working for the board in terms of planning, or are these plans just seen as giving them to the board, you know, for their information? How does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, this is my own vision, but it's taken from conversations that I've had with several legislators, and I'll try and encapsulate their, but certainly some of my own words. As envisioned by the legislators, this board would meet at least four times a year. This board has been charged to provide that continuity, if you will, and to look at in depth. And I suspect the first year they might have to meet 8 or 10 times to really get a handle on what's going on. And then they meet as a board. They would make their recommendations to the director. That director then goes to the commissioner, and that commissioner takes that under advisement, as any commissioner from any of the directors in state government. And then that commissioner, along with some guidance from the third floor, would make either policy or monetary decisions.
Follow up?
I was asking more about the director's responsibility to the board.
Okay.
In this section. It says basically that all these planning documents, I think, draft and submit to the Alaska Marine Transportation Authority Board, and then there's a list of basically long-range planning documents, some of which are long-range, sorry, and some of which are annual. So is the director's responsibility to the board in this connection discharged by the simple delivery of these documents? Is there some kind of process by which the board that gets involved in the question of whether these plans are adequate? I'm just trying to figure out how that part of it would work under this.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I think I understand where you're coming from. and certainly the two primes can jump in here anytime. But it's envisioned that once you've established that nexus between the board and the director, bear with me, the director takes that under advisement. I think works hand in hand with that board to try and reach a consensus, and then that director then is charged by the board to present that as well passionate that as that director can to the commissioner. Obviously that's a very political position, that director. So that director will be sitting down with the commissioner trying to sell and to advocate as best he can, or he or she can, on behalf of the board to say, this is what we would like to see. And of course, the commissioner can decide not to do that. He can decide to go, he or she can decide to go off on a tangent. But again, as I stated earlier, I think it would behoove the department to listen to this whole group, this authority board, which has a stake in what happens to the Breen Highway. If that answers your question.
And I don't want to put Cliff in a pickle. If the two sponsors want to chime in here, that might be appropriate.
Right.
Representative Dugan doesn't care who answers the question.
I'm still flopping around. Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's true. Any answer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dugan. I think, Representative Dugan, what you have is you're going to have a director who has expertise in marine highways. He's going to come forward with a draft plan for the MTAB board. The MTAB is going to have, and I'm using that as the authority board now, the MTAB is going to then have their expertise and their process so that they can go forward and bring all the regional aspects and their particular expertise to the table, make suggestions and changes of that plan. That plan goes back to Section 1, where the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, in consultation with the Marine Transportation Authority Board, shall prepare the comprehensive long-range plan, and the department then will bring that and its updates to the legislature. So this is this consultative process that's going forward, and somebody has to start it. You can't have a committee can't start the plan. I mean, the plan has to start somewhere, and the board is going to be suggesting names for a director, and they've interviewed and have make sure that whoever they're nominating, those people have expertise. They're going to generate a plan, come back. The board's going to bring all of their consulting, all that synergy to the plan, but it's going to go to the department, which is essentially the commissioner, which will present it to the legislature for, you know, our funding and our approvals and those kind of things. So I think that's the way this works. It's got to start somewhere. So it starts with the director or the department, goes to the board, comes back to the department, to the legislature.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions on this?
Thank you, Representative.
Point, Representative Newman.
I think I might have jumped up to the next section, but I'm just going to ask it now. So I've been trying to picture this in my mind. We've got an MTAB board, which is a Marine Transportation Advisory Board, and we're going to scrap that and have a Marine Transportation Authority Board, but doesn't have authority to appropriate, and it doesn't have authority to make decisions. It only has authority to make it to offer advice to a director. Seems like we got the same thing. What am I missing here?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I understand where you're coming from, and other members of the committee. This was the best attempt at trying to elevate the status of the advisory board. authority may be the wrong terminology. We could pick any number of names to call the board. What the prime sponsors were trying to get at is to have a board, if you will, to advocate and to be part of the process, to be another stakeholder for the Marine Highway System. And it was born out of frustration over these several years that this has been going on. And I've watched it for 30 years myself. So it may not be perfect, but and I think we need to massage several areas. By no means it's a perfect bill. It's gone through many, many connotations since first introduced. But and we're the sponsors are certainly open to suggestions and ideas. But I understand where you're coming from, and that is a stumbling block to try and figure out where they fit in the whole regime of DOT.
And I understand. You know, you said it's born out of frustration, and I certainly can try and understand that. You know, the three years and a couple of months that I've been trying to do this, that there is a frustration there. But I think it's a similar frustration with just about any transportation project within the state, because we don't know how much money we're getting from the federal government. And when I talked to Representative Wilson on this earlier, I kind of thought, well, this would maybe be a good idea if we had a separate. I thought it was kind of under the understanding that we'd have the Department of Transportation, and then we'd have somewhat of a Department of Marine Transportation, one for roads, one for marines, maybe two separate entities amongst themselves, and if that might be the ability for them to go out and try and get federal grants, you know, instead of trying to compete for the same pot of money. I was kind of understanding that way, but not the fact that we've got a board and we're calling it something else with this bill.
Let's unless you want to respond.
Good to go here.
1965-200 establishes a board. So board composition, we're going to get lists from both Murkowski's initial order, and we've been handed out one from the Palin administration, so I'm not sure that we need to belabor that. I think the committee in the meantime can review those three documents and come up with conclusions, unless there's specific questions about any of the members that are listed here. We can certainly talk about it.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, sure. In response to Representative Fairclough, she had a question about on page 3, lines 1, 2, and 3, and I'll read that. One member who has a significant level of experience in the private sector or local government specializing in financing or economic development or marketing from each of the following districts, and then you go down A through E, and then 2 through 6. I won't say it's common through the chair, Representative Fairclough, but it has it happens throughout statute, and I can point to a couple regulatory boards, Fish and Game, the Board of Education, where it spells out in statute more or less the quasi-qualifications we would like to see in this individual. So it's not precedent setting, if you will, but the members, the sponsors felt like we really need to focus where this expertise and comes from.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the challenges, I agree with trying to find a solution to the problem, and I know that we're floundering trying to get there, pun intended.
That would be for the Fish Committee.
That was for the fisheries. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
That's right.
Got to get some levity in here. And I know it's a serious issue, especially for the coastal community. So, and I will talk to Representative Wilson, because she was at my door today to try to discuss this. But with the change in the schedules this afternoon for the House floor session, my schedule backed up, and I couldn't talk to her directly. But this is my concern. And it's this concern with MTAB, too. when we're prescriptive with who we have on there, we're being exclusive in a manner. And the reason that MTAB is not gathering support, my opinion, Anna Fairclough, not gathering support statewide is because it's an exclusive. It's a chasm of a group of people that have one interest, and so we're not balancing some of the interests that are out in the rest of the state. So I want to help you, but if you only provide me people that only talk your talk, you never hear the challenges that you're going to face when you get to the legislative process. So when you present changes in the administrative structure or in the legislative structure, no one has heard all the intricacies of your discussion, and they may feel like you bring a Cadillac of a ship forward versus a thoughtful process. And so when I look at your composite, you're again setting up the board from my position to fail, because you have expertise on the marine highway system to deliver the model, but you're not going to get buy-in from anywhere else in the system because you haven't engaged those other systems. And I'm wondering if, as a legislature, we're sidestepping our responsibility in being able to assist you in that manner. What I wrote down that I shared with my two colleagues was, it seems like you're asking us for a paid lobbyist to advocate on your behalf, and it might be cheaper to do that than develop a new system, because all you're creating is a voice that is going to challenge what the administration might want to do, but the administration can fire them if they don't like it because there's no teeth. So that's why I start going around in a circle, like, what are we trying to, sorry for the slang, like, sounds like my kids. What we're trying to do is reach an end or a conclusion so that you can feel like your communities have been heard and that the state is appropriately balancing your needs. And this composite, I don't believe, is going to get you there. I understand the regional distribution of trying to get input from those communities, but you don't draw in a resource that when they present a plan, it's going to be set aside because it only has input from the coastal communities, versus you need all of Alaska's support to say, this is transportation infrastructure we need to make our state function and to be a piece of that pie. So thank you for that opportunity to climb on my box, Mr. Chairman. I want the regional representation that is being proposed here. I just don't know that you have the people to lobby on your behalf if they're all cut from the same mold. And that, by that I mean all representative of coastal communities. They know what they want, but when you present it to an interior Alaska or some other point of the state or the administration structure, then they have to back up and try to balance, and so then there's not the opportunity for that dialogue with your committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fairclough, the exclusive argument is very valid.
Thank you. Any further questions on the representation portion? Not sure if you want to go through the terms or the vacancy or.
Mr. Chairman, a lot of this is boilerplate. We've had legal go down through there, and officers and quorum meetings, per diem, records, legal assistance.
I think on page 4, lines 6 through 9 is the portion that we need to clear up with.
Oh, yes, yes. I didn't mean to slide right past that, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Fairclough.
On page 4, the bottom paragraph, 1965-270, the powers and duties and functions, I understand that Marine Highways has had too many changes and inconsistent schedules. But truly, if you want to advocate for change and represent your board, if we move this forward and we do that, when you say that you have to have experience in the field of marine engineer and maritime operations, I'm going to have to challenge that, because a better person would be somebody with high communication skills that understands the legislative process, that can talk circles in front of committees, and that understand the administrative process. So they need to be able to talk and speak to the legal challenges and issues more than they need to know how to operate the ship. I mean, I understand why you want someone to operate the ship, but your board, it looks like what you've proposed has all of that. But if the maritime person that you're choosing to lead the department can't communicate with a committee or has difficulty with public speaking or doesn't have administrative experience in understanding how to calculate budgets, those skills are more important from my position than the it's not that you wouldn't ideally have that as one of the check boxes that you would in your ideal person, but it would be much more important that they understand the legislative process and that budget so that they, if you truly want a lobbyist to advocate for your positions, they need to understand that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faircloth, sponsors did look at this, and we did have more language in here that tried to clarify, and then it was decided to take that additional language out because that they felt would be up to the board to go ahead and run them through the gauntlet and as best they could to see what their communication skills were like, their prior history that they brought to the job, no matter if they were 25 or 55, that it would depend on how they interviewed before the board and then submitting those names.
That's it, Mr. Chairman, on that section.
Thank you. And Cliff, I do have two non-professional folks that I'd like to give an opportunity to comment before we wrap up at 7. So well, maybe if we can get through the rest of it, I don't want to rush it. We're going to obviously bring this back.
Right.
We could get through just a quick overview of the bill the next 10 minutes or so. Representative Dugan?
Mr. Chairman, I have I'm back up to where you were here a minute ago.
Okay.
On page 4, line 6 is where we're suggesting the amendment. The sponsors are suggesting the amendment that we've got for us here in terms of how the governor can remove members. So that part of it's okay. I was just curious about this section that says, in addition, majority of the membership, remove a member if the member misses more than two meetings in a calendar year, and it has not been previously excused. Do we do that now? I mean, are members of boards and commissions kicking gubernatorial appointments out because they don't show up?
I have no idea.
Does anybody have any idea whether this is common practice, in which case I got no problem with it?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, that is a unique this is boilerplate language, but of course, you're correct. This is a unique situation where this director would be appointed by the governor, and so that would create a unique situation.
Representative Faircloth, did you have a comment?
Well, this is referring to the board members,
right.
And the board members, at least, I was just in a meeting of HESS, and we were talking about the Board of Regents, and inside of that language, I thought, and I could be wrong, but I thought I read language that said the Board of Regents could vote someone out if they missed. So there are places inside of statutes at times where people can be removed from lack of attendance.
Thank you. I'd heard of, you know, misfeasance and other reasons for removal. I hadn't really heard of not showing up for meetings as a reason, although it's a good one. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond just briefly, I got confused when you said the governor appointee, and right, this is a board, and there's language throughout statute that speaks to malfeasance, et cetera.
Thank you. Before we go on, I recognize Representative Dahl. I'm sorry, you've been here for quite a long time.
See, that brings us down to section, it's a new section 4. And that's the route study that's on page 6 of the bill. And originally we had that language in a different section and decided to make it a little more innocuous. And that route study language reads, the Alaska Marine Transportation Authority Board shall conduct a study of the merits of small independent feeder routes throughout the state to improve the efficiency of the marine highway system. And that board shall deliver a report to the next legislature on the 30th day. And then the effective date clause is section 5.
Questions on the route study, Representative Faircloth and then Newman?
Mr. Chairman, I just was going to ask if we have a fiscal note for the route study, if we know what that would encompass over, and I don't need it now.
Okay. Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cliff, maybe DOT would ask, but doesn't DOT do a route study now? I mean, it seems like that would be logical.
through the chair, Representative Newman, not to our knowledge.
We can ask DOT when we get them up here. Any other questions for Cliff? Thank you. I appreciate your thoroughness, Cliff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
I think we all have quite a few things to think about through that presentation. I'd like to get some public testimony before we get the, and I don't think we're going to have time to have the professional people come up, but I appreciate you coming here. First of all, Fred Yates has been patiently waiting in the back. If you could identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Fred Yates, and I work for the Alaska Marine Highway System, have since 1981. Currently, I am the Ock Bay Ferries Terminal Manager. I'm not here representing the department. In fact, I don't even know what the department's position is on this bill. And I'm not here representing any union or anything like that. I'm just here representing myself. I thought I could provide a little bit of input. As I said, I started in 1981. I had two brief lapses in service. One was in 1987 when I moved to Juneau. The other was in 2004 when I decided to stay in Juneau and not move to Ketchikan. I was part of the headquarters management team when the McDowell study came out and was involved in some of those discussions that we had regarding their recommendations. And I just thought I would provide some input. Alaska Marine Highway System has had three contradictory purposes since I started working for them. And one was to provide service for the roadless communities, and that's the primary purpose. But there's not too many travelers on that, and so that needs to be heavily subsidized. The other is to bring independent visitors to Alaska, and that's where the Marine Highway benefits the landlocked communities, Anchorage, Fairbanks, whatever. Then they have the issue of revenues, and depending on which way the wind's blowing, sometimes it's you got to try to make enough revenues to pay for the entire system, and other times it's not so strict. And then always it's the political aspect of squeaky wheel theory, if you will. And you know, in this bill, when I read it, and we're adding 11 people here, I see it as becoming more political and not less. And I see it as if what we're striving for is the first goal for providing service to the roadless communities. It may work all right, but all the other goals will suffer for that. And there won't be much revenue because I think the way this board is structured, it looks to me like that all the members are going to be trying to get more service to their communities, and if they don't, their communities are going to wonder why they didn't get more service for their communities, and I think that puts the board in a bad position, and it doesn't allow for the other goals of bringing independent travelers in. So that's one of the issues I have with the bill. The other is, I don't know, 11-member board seems unwieldy and that's a lot of people that you have to try to bring together all at the same time. Sometimes that can be difficult. The contracting out, I thought was a little bit too vague, but I see the amendment kind of tightens that up a little bit, so that may be okay on that. The best thing I saw in this was a strategic plan, which the Marine Highways has always seemed to be lacking. And to me, that is probably, if you want to fix something, I think that's the right approach, is to go with a strategic plan and get the Marine Highway System to say, okay, this is what the minimum service is going to be or needs to be for community X, Y, and Z, and then allow the system to try to earn revenues on or provide asset their assets and to earn more revenues and once that minimum service is met. That to me is the best way to go about it. That's just my personal opinion, as I said. And I think the two-year scheduling. You can never have two-year scheduling if you don't have the money. There's no way you can write a schedule for without knowing what your funding level is going to be. And if you do, you get into a situation where you're going to have to, if your funding level doesn't come in as you anticipated, then you have to rewrite the schedule. So, I mean, it's kind of negates the point of a two-year schedule. So, and I guess that's all I got to say.
Thank you. Representative Fairclough has a question, sir, if you'd like to stay.
Okay.
Mr. Yates, welcome. Thank you for waiting so patiently. Would you support a biennial budget then? Because a biennial budget might be able to provide a baseline of service so that you could do a two-year system, at least on a base schedule, and have supplementals to that schedule if you needed to, but it might assure a two-year possibility if you're looking to print schedules 2 years out.
Sure, absolutely, but it's my understanding that that's unconstitutional in Alaska, that you can't bind one legislature. One legislature can't bind another legislature for funding. So, I mean, if there's a way to get around that, if you want a two-year schedule, that's the way to do it.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Yates, as a current employee of the Marine Highway System, I'm looking at the people who would be on this board. It does not include a current employee of the Marine Highway System. Do you think that would be a good idea?
I think that could be beneficial. I think that I have some issues with the way the board is structured anyway, but I don't know how to make it better. I mean, there's a lot of things that are left out. One thing that's left out is the landlocked communities and their interests as far as bringing independent travelers to Alaska and what that means for the communities of Anchorage and Fairbanks, and they're not represented at all on the board. And I mean, that's an issue that I see. I mean, Alaska Marine Highways has so many constituencies, it's hard to put something together without leaving somebody out, I guess. And that's so, yeah, I think there are some issues.
Follow up?
Do you like this bill?
When I first looked at it, I thought it had possibilities, but I really like the strategic plan aspect of it. I think the rest of it is, the rest of it is like MTAB to me. I think that is a valid point, and that it would be like MTAB. I guess I don't hate it, but I don't love it either. You know, I think it needs improvement. I guess I can say that.
I just think as a current employee of the Marine Highway System, it takes a lot of courage to come up and talk about internally what system that you work for, and I commend you for that. Good job.
Well, thank you, and I hope I don't get into too much trouble.
Question, Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. My particular election district is landlocked, Mr. Yates, but my community's not. Anchorage is on the water. It just doesn't get ferry service. So.
Okay, I'm sorry, and I grew up in Anchorage, so I shouldn't have known that.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Yates. Appreciate it. We're going to go out of the room. Clay Copeland in Cordova. He's off. Then we'll go to Jerry McCutcheon in Anchorage. And Jerry, we have about 10 minutes, so if you could limit your testimony, it would be much appreciated tonight.
I will. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry McCutcheon. For the record, it's MC capital C UTCHEON. Is Peggy Wilson still there?
Yes, she is.
I'll ask this rhetorically. Would you be willing to give the headquarters back to Juneau if it was in the best interest of the ferry system? I started out thinking that this was a good bill, but however, after listening to the testimony, I can see that it is not. I see the same nincompoops appointing the same nincompoops to run the ferry system. All you're doing is blindly giving more authority and responsibility to those who cannot manage the ferries. If you're going to continue with the road to Juneau, for example, it's going to cost $1 billion. You ought to realize maybe $1.5 billion and take two mainline ferries out of the system according to DOT. Then you might as well just forget the ferry system. When I hear Representative Wilson say, we've got to do something, even if it turns out wrong, that's no different than saying, do something, even if it is wrong. And then invariably, it turns out wrong. The prior statement, Ms. Wilson said, that the ferries are old and breaking down. Lady, they break down not because they're old, but because they are run too hard. And they have been that's been going on for 30 years. My attitude is show me that you can correct the current system, then maybe it's time to give you some more authority. But first show you can make the current system work. What you are saying is that five senators and eight representatives, at least that many, not counting what might come out of Anchorage, cannot go to Governor Palin and explain what you need. That doesn't make much sense to me. I back the statements made by Dugan and Fairclough. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McCutcheon. We have Alex Judson in the room here. Mr. Judson, are you prepared to testify? Alex?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I just want to say thank you for this time to expend my First Amendment rights to free speech in this democracy. My name is Albert Judson. I'm a resident registered voter, state of Alaska. I'm proud to be an Alaskan. I'm glad to be here. It's a great place to live, to work, and to die in the right frame that the world is. But we're confronting an issue today that I believe is lopsided. It's lopsided because the authors of the bill have not taken some things into consideration. I understand that the Alaska Marine Highway is broken. Well, it's very easy to point a finger and say, well, whose fault is it? And time after time, SEAC has taken a lot of blame for a lot of things. The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. But constantly they reminded people that the people voted in the year 2000 for improved services to Alaska. So they can't be blamed. And I have great empathy for the Alaska Marine Highway officials. They can't be castigated or blamed for anything and or everything that happened on Alaska Marine Highway. They were only given pennies to manage a system that required more money than they were allocated. Well, who had the duty to allocate that money? Did the people? No. The people are not allowed to come up with any appropriation bill. Only the legislature can. So with that frame in mind, I'd like to suggest another McDowell study based on the vote of the year 2000 when the people voted for improved services. And that should have meant more money for the budget for the Alaska Marine Highway. You can't manage $1 million project with 2 cents. It's ludicrous. But that's basically what is expected of Alaska Marine Highway. And again, I feel great empathy for these people. I'm glad I'm not in their shoes. So when the people voted for improved services automatically, that should have meant more dollars for the Alaska Marine Highway, according to the 2000 vote. Something really interesting happened not very long ago. Homer got a catamaran listed at $44 million or something like that. It was appropriated for them by Lisa Murkowski. And it was projected that within the first year of their service that they would already be making profit. So how did that happen? How did Homer get this and Alaska Marine Highway gets nothing? And Alaska Marine Highway goes constantly downhill. And all this is happening up in Homer. How did that happen? Who contacted Lisa Murkowski to get that catamaran, which is a fantastic catamaran? It cuts through ice, and it's tremendous. I would like to see three of these for Alaska Marine Highway. One to go from Cordova to Yakutat to Haines, and one to go from Haines, Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan, and one to go from Ketchikan to Bellingham. That would be ideal if we could get the money for that through a grant, just like Lisa Murkowski did for Homer. Now, why couldn't that be done for Alaska Marine Highway? Why wasn't it done? I would like to see something that would evidence the best efforts of the legislature to make the Alaska Marine Highway possible. But I don't see it. It's like foot tracks in the snow. When there's a big snow pile in front of you, somebody goes ahead of you, and the snow pile gets smaller as they make a path through it. Well, when I look through what happened to Alaska Marine Highway, I can't believe that the best efforts were made for the Alaska Marine Highway by the legislatures. There are no studies other than the one in 2002, when there could have been one in the year 2000 when the people asked for improved service. There were no task forces. There were no community meetings. In the meantime, the Alaska Marine Highway is going downhill, which is why I disagree with the statements made by the authors of this bill. During the last few years, there has been almost thoughtless erosion of service by the Alaska Marine Highway Service. Well, again, it goes back to the very same thing. They had two cents to operate a $2 million project and more. So how could that happen? How and why did this happen? I believe the McDowell Group could be contracted to study the budget of the legislature from the year 2000 to 2008 and see how that compares to the breakdowns, the fires, the neglect of Alaska Marine Highway, and how we arrived at this point, which is the main reason why I'm totally opposed to House Bill 294, because it just doesn't match the will of the people. The will of the people was, from the year 2000, improved service that they never got. In fact, when you read a few months later that the budget was cut in half after the people voted for improved service, and then it was cut some more by Governor Murkowski, how much more was it cut before the Alaska Marine Highway finally got a chance to do something? I really feel sorry for the officials. I can't say that enough. And I believe that if the people hear and see the truth, and they have the facts in front of them, they will feel the very same way that I do, that the Alaska Marine Highway officials deserve the benefit of the doubt. They deserve the very best. They've done their best. I give them a lot of credit. They've done a lot more than I could have if I was in their shoes. And more patience, and more dedication, and more commitment to the state. which is what I commend them for. And I disagree with the
Representative Kirkland. I had a question.
One last thing is I disagree with the board being appointed by the governor. All 11 members, the governor already has enough power. The governor already has too much power. There needs to be a study on how to cut back on the governor's power, not only over the legislature, but over the people. We shouldn't be electing dictators into this state government.
Thank you, Mr. Judson. Representative Fairclough had a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming out. I'm sorry, I'll try to speak up. Can you tell me, you're referring to a 2000 vote. Was that just in Southeast or was that statewide?
2000 vote. The 2000 vote, was it statewide or
Yeah, that was statewide. The people voted for improved service.
I'll go back and check. I have voted every year, and I don't remember voting statewide for that issue. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson.
Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you. We're going to hold on to this bill. Obviously, we have a lot of communication between members and the sponsors. So, unless there's anything else in front of the committee, we're going to adjourn for the day.